Welcome to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to my home here live in the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. And I'm just looking out the window to see, I can see the NRG Stadium from here. And the Texans just won over there just a while ago against the 49ers. And the traffic down the street was absolutely horrendous. I went to Target right after church this morning. It's like, oh, I shouldn't have gone there because it was crazy traffic. But anyway, the Houston Texans were victorious today, so that's wonderful. But thank you for being in my home. Thank you for allowing me to take a week or two off a little bit to get recalibrated. And I got my calendar full of a great guest. And tonight we're kicking off another live show with an unbelievable guest. And I'm going to tell you about her just shortly. I'm looking at right now to make sure that we are live on Facebook. And I don't see that here yet, but we'll get TJ on that. There's several different ways that you get connected into the program tonight. You can call right to the radio station, 888-627-6008. TJ says we are live on Facebook. Greg, you need to know what you're doing. That's why I know periodically how to turn the computer on. That's all I know, TJ. So give me a break. Anyway, so we're live on Facebook. So you can actually get on there, put a comment. And if I can figure out how to read the comment, I will look at that during the commercial break. So you can get involved that way. Or you can text me right here at 832-396-6525. And during the commercial break, I will go through the text to see if there's any questions. And OTJ is going to help me. He's going to take this old man and take me down the road. He will post any comments right here so I can see him in the chat room. But the best way, if you want to just talk to the guest tonight or me or both of us, just call straight into the radio station. I'd love to just bring you right on live. We don't censor. We don't edit. We don't say, hey, you have to ask it this way. We'll just bring you on live and say, hey, what's on your mind? 888-627-6008. Our guests may be going, oh, no, my friends may call. But anyway, so brace yourself, and it's going to be a great show. I want to finish something that I started a few weeks ago before I took a couple weeks a break. I was talking about what I think is the importance of journaling. And I journal like crazy. Matter of fact, I got a brand new one that I just love, this one. I plan on filling this one up starting probably this week. I just love to journal. And journaling for me does several different things. And just if you want to jot these down, you're more than welcome to. For me, journaling reduces stress in a major way. It allows me to just brain dump. I'll just open it up at the end of the day and I'll just start writing. I don't worry about punctuations. I don't worry about capitalizations, sentences, spelling of right. And in that brain dumping, I have found out over the years that I need to get all this stress out of me. And journaling does that for me. So when I'm really, it's my way to vent. It's my way to release all of that stuff that's bottled up inside of me. And then I also have a section. I usually do this in the back of the book, and I work from the back forward with gratitude journal. And I'll try to find three or four things that I am wanting to say, hey, thank you for, that I'm really happy this is happening to me. I'm blessed in this area. This happened to me that I'm really excited about and looking forward to. But in that, it's a double-edged, not sword, but a double-edged benefit for me, because I get to release all the emotions, but then I also get to complete and thank my creator for things that's happening to me that's good. And on one side is the negative side sometimes, because I'm releasing all the bad things. But on the other, say, hey, it's not that bad because I'm still breathing. I'm still able to get out of the chair. I'm still able to walk. Some days I have more difficulty than others. And then there's bullet journaling, where you can actually plan things that I want to make sure I get done this week. Like I already got a half a page in my old journal that I'm getting ready to close out for tomorrow. So when I wake up tomorrow, I have to do this. I have to pack tonight and have to get everything ready, because I'm going to Ohio tomorrow after work, in Springfield, Ohio. And I didn't find out until I accepted it last week, when I said, we're in God's name, Springfield, Ohio, where you can't get there from here. You have to go to Dayton or Columbus, and then you have to drive an hour, hour and a half. So I got to figure out all that, make sure I have all the ducks in a row. And bulleting that does that. So I have to make sure before I leave town, I have everything covered at the office, everything covered where I need to be personally, and everything covered for when I land in Ohio, to be able to get to that and speak all day Tuesday, and then drive back to Dayton, get on a plane, and be here late Tuesday night. It also, journaling increases my mental clarity. And when you get to be my age, I mean, look at this. When you get to be my age, I need all the clarity that I can get. I need to be able to focus more. So having it on a page helps me organize. And then I also can prioritize where my day and my week's going to go. It also gives me evidence of things that I've overcome, challenges that I've had. And then I'll read some of the past things, say, wow, what I thought was going to be the end of my world really wasn't. So I thank God for that also. It also increases my self-awareness. It also improves your memory. We forget 50% of what we hear within 1 hour. We forget 75% of what we hear in 1 day. And we'll forget 90% of something a week from now. And when you get to my age, I forget where I parked my car just a few hours ago. And if it wasn't for that little clicker on my hearing, where it's honking, I'm going through the parking lot trying to get it to honk at me, I wouldn't be able to find my car a lot of times. But journaling helps me get that to where I don't forget things, and it helps me. And I think just writing it down. And I also read this week that a student that journals on a consistent basis, and a consistent basis is 3 to 4 times a week, will be 1 grade average better in school. Now, I don't know about you, but that's pretty good productivity there, and pretty good results just from journaling, because it gets everything down to where we need to be. It also gives me a new perspective. It allows me to write it down, to brain dump, and then introspect. Okay, that happened to me, but is it really that bad? Is it really going to matter a year from now? Is it really going to matter 3 years from now? And when you're diagnosed with ALS or cancer or whatever that you may have, some things just aren't worth getting too excited about, because every day is an absolute blessing. It also helps me with idea generation. I'm always looking for that next idea, and I do a lot of that on my phone. I'll be driving, and like driving to Abilene, where I met our guest tonight, was great because when I have a thought, I'll just say, "Hey Siri," well, I can't do it now. She'll answer me, "Hey what?" And then I'll put that message in to my phone, so it helps me create ideas. And you never know when you're going to get an idea, and you don't. And if you don't write it down, you forget it. It also reduces being overwhelmed. It causes that nonstop cycle of obsessive thinking. And I get that way. I'll just take one subject, one thing that happened, mostly negative, and then I just hit the repeat button in my mind, and it just loops over and over and over. Once I drop it on a page, it seems like that tends to cease a little bit. And it also helps me log new ideas on, and not forget those. And the last thing it does, it says it literally will improve your health. And we all need that. I know I need that, but it will actually reduce your blood pressure, improve your liver function, and much more just by doing something in a little book. Where you can just put your ideas down. This one has on the front of it a quote from Lewis Carroll in Alice in Wonderland. It says, "Have I gone mad? I'm afraid so. But let me tell you something, the best people usually are. Anybody can be ordinary. It takes somebody different to be extraordinary." And I always tried to do things different. I've always wanted to write a book where the first page of the book was at the back of the book. And I haven't figured out how to do that yet. But if I can do that, I'm going to produce that or publish that before I die. But I thought that'd be so neat to have the front of the book at the back of the book. And then you'd have to read from the back to the front. But anyway, that's a different ballgame. Anyway, that's the things about journaling. I'm so excited. 888-627-6008. I have a new friend. I tell you what, I don't have many friends in my life, but it's just awesome to be able to meet people on the road and in some great organizations. And I had the blessing to be able to be up 2 days with Abilene, Texas. And you can get there from here. And it's a great drive, kind of long, but it's all right. I kind of like that one. And I hope to get to go back. But I met a person that was speaking right before me. And I'll tell you what, it was hard to follow her on the program because she was such a great speaker. And I immediately, when she was done, I went up and said, "Hey, would you be interested in being on the show tonight?" Or not tonight, but on my show. And she said, yes. So I contacted her and emailed her, and she gratefully accepted. And her name is Lisa Burks, Burks. And she is the outreach clinical leader for Forensic Nurse Examiner Program at Hendrick Health in Abilene, Texas. And Hendrick Health is an unbelievable organization from the top to everybody that works with them. I just love getting to meet all of them. I'm hoping you get to go back and meet with them again. But she has been a nurse for 9 years. And she was on the neurology telemetry, I don't even know what that means, and neurosurgery unit at Hendrick Medical Center. She has been a forensic nurse for 5 years, currently works in outreach and education for the forensic nurses department. She enjoys educating the community about what she's going to talk about tonight and what I already heard her talk on. And if you need somebody to talk about this subject, this is the person to get a hold of about domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse to increase awareness and prevention, and dating, stalking, was the subject that she was speaking on and has a high degree of education in that. And she's married to her high school sweetheart. Isn't that just awesome? And I got a feeling they have been together for probably over 17 years. But when you go to one of their football games, Lisa's going to be the one that is screaming the loudest from the stands. And I was at a football game Thursday night. There's always a few of those. It's like, oh my lands, what happened to her? She's had too much Red Bull. I believe that is our guest tonight. Lisa, come on in. TJ, bring her in right here side by side. Everybody can see her instead of my ugly mug. Lisa, welcome to the program tonight. I just appreciate your husband allowing the family to share you with our audience tonight. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just want to give a disclaimer. If I'm the loudest, it's because I know somebody out on that field.
And, okay, so do you know somebody on the field?
Usually, it's either my son or my nephew.
There you go. That's what it's all about. And when your family's in there, that's a whole different ballgame. You are excused, and you get to be play the ref and remind the ref every time they make a wrong call and things of that order. You one of those kind of yellers?
I try not to be. I really try not to be.
Okay. 888-627-6008. If anybody in the stands wants to refute that, you're welcome to call and let us know. Hey, Lisa, tell the world about you, what you do, what when you wake up in the morning before your feet ever hit the floor, go, hey, I want to make sure I try to do that one more day. What are you passionate about in life? Tell me about Hendrick Health and just anything else, but just give us a little quick nutshell about you and what your interests are.
Sure. So, like Dr. Williams said, I've been a forensic nurse for 5 years. At Hendrick Health, we are certified to see all ages of patients. So we can see anybody from 0 to 99 that has been a victim of violence. So this is sexual assault, human trafficking, domestic violence, non-fatal strangulation, child abuse, and elder abuse. All walks of life, we meet them where they're at. That's what I hope that I portray to each of my patients. Everybody's going to come through our doors and have different priorities. And so it's very important in providing that care to meet them where they're at. They might be more concerned about putting a meal on the table for their kids versus getting the medical care that we think they need in that moment. And so that's really what I'm passionate about is finding their needs, at least opening that door for them n to let them know that they can come back. That this is, there's no timeline to get that help, but maybe sometimes the hospital and meeting that forensic nurse is the first time that they'll get connected to these community resources to help them in the long term. My kids are huge motivators. Just being able to create that safe space at home is a blessing in my households, and because some of the really traumatic things that I can hear. And so they're definitely the ones that push me to keep going and keep getting better and to keep helping these victims. Like I tell my oldest daughter, she's in middle school, so bullying and all that is a thing for us right now. But I tell her, you don't know what other kids are having to go home to. So it doesn't matter, how your day at school went. You treat people with kindness. And so I hope that she is doing that at school outside of my presence. But that they're huge motivators for me to keep going. And of course, my husband, we have been married for only, it'll be 13 years in a few
13
weeks.
years.
So we've been together 17 total
There you
years.
go. Okay.
But yeah, he's a huge support. I wouldn't be, I just graduated with my master's degree. We went to Phoenix last weekend to celebrate that. That was a cool family trip, but also, I mean, he pushes me to keep going and to keep meeting my goals. And so he's a huge support system for me at home as well.
And you graduated from the Great Grand Canyon University,
Yes.
correct?
Yes. So
Great
what else?
school.
Yeah, I've been really pleased with the program.
Yeah, great school. Tell me, explain to the listeners if they don't have the information of what's a forensic nurse compared to an RN. What's the difference between that forensic side of this? What are we talking about?
Sure. So, forensic nurse examiner is a registered nurse with special training to be able to provide the forensic medical exam for all those patients that I talked about when they experience violence. It does take about 1 to 2 years to get through this training. In Texas, that is kind of facilitated by the Office of Attorney General, so that they give us our currency of practice. They certify us and say they're safe to practice and be able to provide this forensic medical care. But we're going to get these patients in. We're going to get that forensic medical history, talk about what happened to them in a very safe space. We're trauma informed. So basically, all that means is the entire exam is going to be patient centered. We're not going to do anything that the patient doesn't want us to do. And so that's kind of going back to meeting them where they're at. If they don't want to talk to us, if they don't want to complete parts of the exam, that's their choice. I hate to use the word refuse. Nobody refuses care when I'm their nurse. They decline care or they decline an option because they always have that choice. But we will also document any injuries, that visible injuries that we see. A lot of times they don't have visible injuries, so we might have to ask about symptoms, especially with our domestic violence. And so we're going to ask about those symptoms that, like, a hoarse voice or their vision is really blurry, or they're having some confusion, disorientation. We're going to document all of that in our history and get that down as part of the investigation. We're going to take photographs. We want to have this documented. We use a pretty special camera to document all of this. We also provide treatment for our sexual assault victims. So this will prevent any unwanted pregnancy. It will prevent any STIs, sexually transmitted infections that they could have been exposed to as a result of their assault. And then we also connect them to community resources, that crisis center, that local crisis center that can have mental health resources that can help them with anything after the medical exam, talking to law enforcement, going to the prosecutor's office. Our crisis centers and our community partners are really good about staying with that patient, and having that advocate with them is really beneficial because they know what to expect next. When somebody has experienced assault or violence, they're very overwhelmed. They don't know what the next step is, what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing. And so just having that advocate and even the nurse there to say, we're going to help you. We're in your corner. We support you. We believe you. And this is what we're going to do next.
So in this context, without going too graphic, and I guess we can go as graphic as you feel is necessary, is this after they have been attacked, abused, raped, beat up? Is it immediately after, or sometimes it's weeks after? How quickly do you try to get this test done in a safe environment, like an emergency room or a clinical office, to be able to do this exam? What's the normal? Is that the things that is covering date rape or something like that?
The sooner the better, especially when we're trying to prevent any infection. We call an acute exam 120 hours, so that's 5 days. So anybody that comes in within those 5 days will essentially get the same treatment. They can have the same antibiotics, the same emergency contraceptive, evidence collect DNA evidence collection, and of course some of those visible injuries that they might have gotten from their assault. We can document that, but we see, especially in our pediatric patients, they can come in years later and we're still going to see them. We're going to test for any infection, make sure that they're safe. We're going to establish safety. We're going to get their history down and again, get them connected to those community resources. It's more common with children that we don't see them right after the abuse. The nature of that outcry is very complex in some situations. And so they may not come in right after it happened. It might be weeks, months, years later before they finally tell somebody.
Is there something that can be detected for a child that has been sexually abused? I know probably more so in a female, that you look for at a young age. If that's the case, if it's been done to them in the past that can be proof that, hey, wait, this child has been, molested or has been abused?
As far as physical findings,
Yeah.
95% of the time, there's not going to be any physical findings that this has happened to them. That is the most important part of our exam, is getting that history and getting them to talk to us and give us those details. Because the nature, especially in children of child abuse, physical force is not used very often. Grooming, coercion, those kind of
Yeah.
things. And so there's not going to be some, those visible injuries on a child. People often think that the hymen, we can look at a female's hymen and say, yeah, this it's no longer intact. Something has happened to her, but that is a myth. I like to think of the hymen as a landmark of the female genitalia. It's a ring of tissue at the entrance into of a female's vagina. And so, again, it's just a landmark tissue. It can have injury, and we're definitely going to look because we don't know if we don't look. But it's not a covering. It's not anything, or it shouldn't be a covering. That's another medical problem if it is. But there's nothing really that we're going to be able to see that to point out. Even if we see something abnormal, if we don't have that history from the child, we can't say that it's caused by sexual abuse.
Yeah.
We have to have that history and basically rule everything else out before we are going to pinpoint something and say it could be consistent with their abuse.
Do you also do the exams on boys?
Yes.
Okay, so it's both. Okay,
Yes.
good. Okay. Do you are you involved at Hendrick Health or through the same program, the forensic program there, where you actually are asked to show these findings or reveal these findings or answer questions about these findings in court appearances? That do you have to be there, or is it just in the paperwork in the reports?
Oh no, I get subpoenaed to
You
testify
do.
frequently about the findings of my exam, and then oftentimes I can also give an expert opinion about the consistency with the patient, the child's history, and the physical findings, and anything else that we found in our medical exam.
Well, now I'm here in Houston. Anybody that is from a big city in a metro that is, millions of people here, and I can see this probably every day, dozens of times in any of the emergency rooms of the 28 hospitals we have right here at the medical center. Abilene is such a nice town. I got to, we were there. Of course, you live there, but get to meet all the police officers and the detectives, and it was just a great family feeling. Is this a problem in every town in Texas? This has become, have you noticed a rampant increase of this? Are we just becoming more aware that, hey, wait, it doesn't just happen in the big towns, it's happening everywhere?
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's everywhere. We see the hospital's based in Abilene, but we see about 19 surrounding counties.
Oh, wow.
So we cover a fairly large area just because it's Texas and we're rural. But it's everywhere. It doesn't matter, big city, small town, it's everywhere, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you what. I think we're going to go ahead and take a commercial break. On the other side of this, Lisa, what I really want to do is I want to find out your wisdom, education, and expertise on the parents that are listening right now about their own kids, about stalking, about the dangers of this thing in kids, and how you can help control that and stop it, or how to even recognize it if it's happening in the children or the grandchildren of the people that's listening to the program right now. So we're going to do that right on the other side of this commercial break. So get a good drink of water because you're going to need to wet your whistle. In about a minute and 22 seconds, we'll be right back. Don't leave us, 888-627-6008. And you will not want to miss the last portion of this program because Lisa's going to lay you out with a lot of wisdom. Get a piece of paper and a pen. We'll be right back.
Get ready for a life-changing journey. From the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come, Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, learning how to turn life's pain into life's power and purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out, because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
All right, welcome back. I'm reading some comments. My phone's going off the record here. We're having a little bit of trouble with Facebook. It looks like it's being up and down right now. But it looks like Joy, Michelle Ortega, I don't know, Lisa, if you know Joy, but she says you're absolutely awesome, a great nurse in general, but you're definitely in your element as a forensic nurse, and you're so intelligent, so privileged to know you and have worked with you. And then Samana says you are one of our favorite nurses. So you have some support out there, some people listening. The other day when we were in the same conference and had the blessing to be there with you, and to get to hear you early in the morning, which is always the hardest one to get everybody awake, you shared so much information. What is it that got you involved with the stalking and the dating situations and what's going on? Was it something that is happening in the community there, or that was just a general interest, or do you have a personal interest in that? Just tell me how that works, and then what's some of the things that we can kind of see and why you chose this to be one of your expertise fields?
Domestic violence is an issue everywhere. And I believe that the victims of domestic violence, whether they don't come forward, they don't feel safe to come forward, there's a lot of stigma, but they need a lot of support. They need a lot of support. And then last year I went to a conference and it was about stalking. And I thought I knew stalking, and I was like, okay, I'll go. That sounds interesting. And it blew my mind when I was in there. It just changed my perspective, because domestic violence and stalking often go hand in hand. And when they do, it can be very dangerous. It can be fatal. And so it changed my practice. When I'm seeing these patients that are involved, have, you know, suffered from domestic violence, especially intimate partner violence, I needed to be asking more questions. I didn't feel like I was doing my patients any justice by not fully understanding the situations they were in, fully understanding the risk factors for them. It wasn't just, you know, that emotional and physical violence that we hear with domestic violence, intimate partner violence. It's also stalking. And that goes beyond the household sometimes. That can follow the victim to her work. She could be out with friends. If she goes to school, it could follow her to campus. And so it severely disrupts the victim's life. And so I just started doing more research, and the speaker had a case study that unfortunately was very sad. The victim ended up being killed by her stalker, and who was also a former intimate partner. And so I just realized I got to do better. We got to do better. I bring this back to my team, and you know, I'm in outreach and I'm in education now. And so, you know, we have to bring awareness for us so that we can raise awareness in our community that this is a problem.
How does it typically begin? Is it always with a boyfriend girlfriend type of thing, and maybe there's a breakup and say, I really don't want to date you anymore. It's only been a couple months and you're not for me. And then the guy can't get over that and he starts hounding and texting and following and watching and or is it just people that meets somebody at HEB that's a cashier and kind of gets infatuated with them, or is it all the above? What do you see mainly, and what's some of the signs that we can notice if it's happening to one of our children or grandchildren?
The most common relationship between the stalker and their victim is going to be an intimate partner. This could be a current in some cases, but it could also be a former intimate partner. A former intimate partner, they feel that rejection, and so that could potentially amp up their tactics. They feel more rejection and resentment, but it could you could be. There's really not a lot of discrimination in stalking because it can happen to a friend, just somebody you know can start stalking you. Although rare, it can be from a stranger, like you said, that you meet at the grocery store from a brief encounter. And then they begin stalking. Medical personnel are also at risk of being stalked by patients' family members. It's happened that way as well. But the most dangerous form of stalking is when it's an intimate partner relationship. And they don't, you know, that relationship ends and they're estranged or whatever, and then that stalking continues even after the relationship is over. That's when stalking becomes most dangerous.
And when does the snowball start to grow? How's that first couple turns down the hill as it starts to develop into more of an obsession that should be kind of a, not maybe a red flag, oh my lands, let's call the police, but a light red flag of, hey, there's a concern here. We need to keep an eye on it. What's some of those signs that we need to watch for?
So, stalking is a pattern of behaviors. A pattern is two or more of different tactics or behaviors. So, when you notice that maybe it's not just calling repeatedly, but then it's also emailing, those multiple forms of communication. Cyberstalking is very common, especially in our teens, but even also in some adults. Like you said, the phone, we all have access to it. It's all at our fingertips right now. But then, you know, maybe it goes beyond cyberstalking and now he's leaving unwanted gifts. So it's or they are leaving unwanted gifts. And so it's more than one tactic. And that escalation, that's really when that those, you know, those alarm bells really need to be ringing. But also trust that the victim needs to learn to trust their gut, and that's very hard because like you said, a few month relationship, and they're like, you know, I don't know, it's just not working for me. They probably had that gut feeling. And so, you know, he's just a little too forward, or that, you know, she's just, you know, coming on. She's really clingy. She, you know, I want to go out with my friends and she won't leave me alone. They notice those things in the relationship, but they don't stop when the relationship stops. Those stalking behaviors will keep going. And so, they probably had that gut instinct, and then sometimes it just keeps escalating, like you said, where it becomes more and more of those behaviors that cause fear. That's when stalking, in the legal definition, when it causes that fear, in the victim, that's stalking. That's when it's beyond harassment or bullying. It's stalking, and then, like I said, it's dangerous.
And Lisa, it goes both ways, right? I mean, the girl can stalk the guy.
Yes.
And even in same sex relationships, I would imagine the stats are just as high, if not maybe higher,
Right.
in lesbian and homosexual relationships. I would think that maybe there's that same type of behavior. Am I correct on that?
Yes. It's more, it's not, gender based per se. It's, I think it's more like the relationship between the stalker and their target. So acquaintance, intimate partner, friend, whatever.
And what is it? Because I hear some terms that I really don't know the definitions of. I have my own, area that I talk on and know a lot about. You hear, oh, they ghost me. What does that even mean? When you're ghosting somebody, I have no clue. Do you know?
I would, if I had a patient tell me that, I would definitely want them to clarify, because it can mean a lot of different things.
Okay.
But a lot of times ghosting is like they stopped all contact. They're not responding to any messages. They're not answering their phone calls. So they've stopped all contact. They're a ghost to that person now. They don't, they're not there. So.
Okay. And then gaslighting. What is
Gaslighting.
that?
So that is a form of emotional abuse, which so is stalking. In domestic violence, those tactics that they use, stalking and gaslighting are both forms of emotional abuse. But gaslighting is making the turning around everything on that victim, making them feel like it's their fault. It's often belittling, making them feel as if they're crazy. It didn't really happen that way. That's just what you think happened. It's placing the basically, it's almost like deflecting the blame off of them and convincing the victim that that's really their fault.
Right.
So then they start to doubt themselves, like, well, am I crazy? Did it really happen that way?
Okay. And when should a parent get involved? When do they go, oh, no, that's nothing. Oh, come on. Kids will be kids. Teenagers will be teenagers. Don't worry about that, honey. Them following you around the block is no big deal. When should it be, no, wait, we're getting involved in this now?
Adolescent relationships are tricky because they're learning how to be in that
Yeah.
romantic relationship. And so oftentimes they come on, they don't have those sense of boundaries a lot of times that adults learn or have learned or should have learned. So they, if they really like somebody, they are going to keep pursuing them. And so it could be initially seen as he just, they just really like you. And so they're just going after you, they're pursuing you. But I would say if the victim has tried to set those boundaries and said, you can't contact me after 9, or I'm in school from this time to this time, or I have practice after school, for whatever reason, they try to set boundaries and the other person is continuously sending those messages, making threats, trying to intimidate their victim. That's when we need to st parents need to start stepping in and saying, that's not okay. It's never okay that somebody treats you like that, that somebody talks to you like that. You have your life, they have their life. You shouldn't always be together. It shouldn't always be about each other, especially adolescents when they have school, sports, and everything else that they're doing. So modeling those healthy relationship behaviors is very important. And so when if they don't respect those boundaries, parents definitely need to step in. And so it begins by just talking, right?
Yeah.
How's your relationship going? See, are they treating you okay? What do y'all talk about? How does he talk to you? How does she, does she listen to you when you say don't contact me or whatever? It's having those conversations with your teen and just get at least opening the door that, hey, you can come talk to me. I'm here to protect you and I'm here to keep you safe.
And what age is this happening now? I mean, when I was in grade school, we were still in bibbed overalls and barefoot in 8th grade and didn't even think about, dating a girl. But things are different now than what it used to be in Southern Illinois. But what age does this stuff start showing its face to parents?
The most common age group to be stalked is the older, I would say the older adolescents to young adults, about 16 to 24. So, about 15, 16, they're getting probably a little bit more freedom. They're learning how to drive. They may or may not have a phone. Most, I think, at that, especially if they're driving, they're going to have a phone. I think when they get that phone, that's when we really need to establish those set rules and what's okay in a relationship and what's not okay. What priorities need to be, so to speak, like school, sports, home. Because it's when they get this phone, because cyber stalking and even cyber bullying is so common in teens, that we really need to have those conversations as parents. I tell my daughter all the time, I'm not your friend. My job is to keep you safe. So I'm gonna know the passcode on your phone. You have limits on your apps. If I need to go through it, I will. But it's also about the, it's almost like you're having to teach them trust too. Like, almost prove to me that I can trust you with the phone. Come talk to me, hopefully. Trying to give them that a little bit of independence that they all crave, but at the same time, stepping in when we need to and not letting it get too far.
What do you think, Lisa, about my soapbox? And I'm sure you've heard it once or twice in Abilene about if you let your child take this cell phone to the bedroom with them at night. You might as well open and lock the front door and throw it wide open. Is this thing dangerous?
Very.
And especially at night, right?
Yes. We get, as forensic nurse patients, as young as I don't even know, 10, 11, 12, and they're on Roblox, they're on Snapchat. These apps and these games that where they're able to share their location, and that's often how they meet their perpetrator. Is through these apps, and they sneak out or to meet them up somewhere, or they will just come to the house and pick them up. But you're absolutely right. Those apps, and even just having it at night when everybody's in bed, so nobody's over your shoulder, like, why are you texting so much on your phone? We're eating dinner. Why are you on your phone so much? Nobody's there to kind of monitor that. You're in your bedroom, you're alone, and who knows who in the world you're messaging and letting them know exactly where you're at.
And Roblox, the CEO of Roblox was on Fox late last week, and it's like, oh wait, I got to watch this. And he was saying, oh, we prevent this, we don't allow this, we try to curtail this and put security in there where an older person can't be talking to a younger. And it's like, I don't know if I buy that because every time I hear it, and if parents go, Rob, what? Are we already a day late, dollar short?
Yes, a lot of times. Because, I mean, they can put in anything to say they're 12 when it's really a 38-year-old. They can get around those restrictions, and they do. They will. They're smart. They will do that to have access if they really want that access.
I saw just before we went on tonight, I think TikTok is now allowing sexual content. And I did not know that. I don't do TikTok, but I know a lot of people do. And it's like, why would they even go there? I don't know if they had in the past or not, but I guess they're opening the boundaries a little bit to the freedom. What's some of the things that kids and parents should do? Because you talk about having that conversation about boundaries. Should a child ever be, or a teenager, or an adult ever be embarrassed of placing boundaries around themselves? I mean, that's their safe zone, correct? I mean, how do we establish boundaries and tell kids to have value in yourself enough to put these borders and boundaries around you to protect you?
It can be hard, especially when they're getting a lot of peer pressure and, well, all my friends say this. I think one of the easiest ways is modeling those positive relationships at home, but also at school, teachers, coaches, all these other adults, especially who have access to our children throughout the day, knowing what those signs look like, but also, again, modeling that positive relationship with our teens, that this is what it should look like. And also, especially teachers and coaches, if they see some odd behavior, stepping in, and just asking them, what's going on? Is anything going on? Are you
Right.
okay? Is there anything I can help you with? Just asking those questions. I mean, that's the easiest way, I guess. But also, like you said, reinforcing that this is your body. You have this. This should be a safe space. Your phone should be a safe space. I tell my daughter all the time, your phone is so I can get a hold of you. That's first and
Yeah.
foremost. Everything else is kind of a privilege. Getting to contact your friends and play games with them, that's a privilege. But you still should have, you're not gonna send certain pictures just to your friends. You're not gonna, you don't ever tell anybody, where you're located at. So knowing and telling them, some people might not agree with that, and they might not, and that's okay, but these are the rules, and you have to, it's okay to say no. It's okay to
Yeah.
disagree with people who are trying to get you to do something you're not comfortable with. So,
Yeah.
and that's hard
H
though.
has sextortion been an issue up in North Texas here, like it is here in Houston? Are you seeing things of that order that's coming through at the children now?
Again, Snapchat.
Yeah.
They're sending these images of themselves, and
And
then,
that's the one where it supposedly disappears in 7 seconds.
yes,
But it doesn't.
not always, because you can save them now in chat and in the little chat box, so they can stay there forever if somebody has them saved in there, or they can screen record, so nothing is ever safe. Once you send it out there. But yeah, they'll use those. Or we had a case where she was unknowingly videoed, and then they use that as blackmail. And that's really hard, because then it gets out to the whole school, and that's kind of another layer of trauma,
Yeah.
because they're getting bullied and made fun of because of this video or these pictures that they're seeing. But it doesn't always get out. Sometimes it's just used to blackmail. Like, you'll do this for me, or I have all these images of you, and
Yeah. Do you think teachers are educated enough on this? Do you think the church is educated enough on this?
I think there's some gaps there. I think locally, I think that they really do try. My sister's a teacher, and she's come to me with a few, what do I look for? How do I, or whatever, but,
What grade?
she's fifth grade
Fifth
this year.
grade. Oh, okay. That's right there at the
That's
okay.
right there. Yep. And so I think they could have just a little bit more education. But just speaking just on a personal level with my sister, I know that they do receive some as teachers in the state of Texas. But in church too. Churches, I think, sometimes treat this still as a very taboo subject.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk about it. But again, they're with our kids too. A lot of times, we do like this youth retreat that in my hometown, and it's very popular from 6th through 12th grade. And so they're with them all weekend. And if you're gonna, you need to be equipped to address issues and talk to parents if it comes up, because sometimes, I mean, kids will lie to you. You can ask them, and they'll lie to you. They're kids. That's kind of what they do.
Right.
But so parents may not know, and so others might pick up on that before the parents can.
Is there a resource that you recommend? Because from my awareness, I don't know of too many places you can go to Barnes and Noble and grab that book that's the encyclopedia of this. Is there some good resources that you say, hey, wait, you need to get your hands on this?
If not, are you going to write the book?
I mean, they're the CDC,
Yeah.
they have a lot of good information, especially about just general kind of public health problems with child abuse, bullying, things like that, and they'll be on there. But for like stalking, domestic violence, there's the National Domestic Violence Hotline. There's also Victim Connect Resource Center, which that's a fairly new one to me, but it's been mentioned by other resources. But they will, that's any victim of crime. They can kind of help, and they'll find local, both of these will find local resources. They have hotlines, and they'll help you kind of get connected and tell you what's in your area and what support you may have. Another one just for stalking is Stalking Prevention Awareness and Resource Center. So SPARC with a C. That's a good one for teachers. They have education on there for educators, coaches, anybody who works with adolescents, or anybody who works with adults who also may be experiencing stalking.
Yeah.
Great.
You know, I was sitting there thinking, there's a movie that I remember that changed my world. And it's an older movie. I think it's called Fear with Mark Wahlberg and Reese
Oh, with
Witherspoon.
yes.
Oh, this is what you're talking about in the
Yes.
most vivid and unbelievable way. I felt the anger in that dad
Yes.
when, you know, it's like, oh my land.
She broke up with him in that movie, and he
Yeah.
became rejected, and he started got his friends too, and that's common too, that by proxy stalking. They'll get friends or common acquaintances to intimidate, to do those stalking behaviors with the victim. So yes, fear is a
Yeah.
really good example of that.
Now, Lisa, if somebody wants to say, "Hey, wait, I got a group, I got a school, I have an organization that wants to get this taught to us on a Saturday conference or something of that order." Is that something that you're willing to go and
Absolutely.
do?
Absolutely.
Okay, how can they get a hold of you so we can get that posted on this page, and then let the people know tonight? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best way is by email. So that's
And that would be.
L Burks, Burks, at Hendrick, Hendrick, health.org.
Okay. L Burks at Hendrickhealth.org.
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what, I knew that we would get a lot of response from this tonight, and I knew that you would just pour out wisdom. So thank you so much for being on the program with us, and I'd love to have you back. We can even go drill deeper than this because you spoke, I don't know, for an hour, hour and 15 minutes and never took a breath. Your PowerPoint slides were just going, man, there's so much information. And I kept taking pictures. I'm thinking, yikes, what's this guy doing? But I was trying to get like, I've never seen that before. I've never seen that before. So much information. And I appreciate you sharing it with us tonight. And I'd love to have you come back on.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. If anything I can ever do, hopefully we'll be up in Abilene again fairly soon there at Hendrick Health. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Great job. As we do each and every week, and I wanted to let you know, parents, grandparents, sometimes you think it's out of control. And it's not, because we have people like Lisa and the people that she deals with and Hendrick Health that's training this and calling the entire community to come in and the police officers and everybody to just spend some time pausing and taking all this in and soaking it all in, because we all need this. It's right outside these windows, ugly things are happening. And the only way to defend that is to get knowledge, education, and information, and then be open enough to share with our kids. If we don't, who will? If we don't take the time, who's going to? And who do you want your most precious treasure to be told about the most dangerous elements in life? The parents, the grandparents, their family. So that's what it's all about. So I just appreciate Lisa being on. And as we do each and every week, I always just want to let you know, no matter what's going on in your world, no matter what you face tomorrow morning when you get up and you head to work, or you get up and you're looking at your family, or a call in the middle of the night, I always want to let you know there's always hope. Always, always hope. You can give me a text, 832-396-6525, if you just need somebody to listen. God bless you. Join us right here, and you will not want to miss next week for another live edition of Breaking the Silence, live from Houston. Good night, and thank you, Lacey, for being with us tonight. Have an awesome, awesome week. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.